Greetings. Thanks for listening to Beer Soup with Ron Suresha. We have an enchanting show bubbling up for you this week in the Beer Soup hot tub, so listen up, bears. We have the first part of Peter Casciarelli's delightful story, Wolf Soup, from his book, Gay Fairy and Folktales. Shoutouts, announcements, and the usual audio for Fest. We're locked and loaded, so stand back. You're just in time for Beer Soup. Welcome to Beer Soup, news, interviews, skews, and schmooze for the online Ursine community. This is your host, Ron Suresha, casting my pod to you through the mysterious tubes of the interweb from southeastern coastal Connecticut, USA. You're listening to episode number 68 of the Beer Soup podcast, streaming online at bearradio.net, Mondays and Wednesdays, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific times. Beer Soup is also available through our free iTunes subscription and download service. Access the Beer Soup archives through the Beer Soup tab on ronsuresha.com. That's spelled R-O-N-S-U-R-E-S-H-A. Presumably you can tell without seeing me that I am recording this stark naked in a steamy outdoor hot tub, because that's what the rubber duckies are for. Clothing optional. Bear Soup is sponsored by the Biblio Bears at Bare Bones Books. Vote for Bears on Bears in the first ever Gay Bees. Great news from the TLA folks, who are also TLA Distribution. They also carry the full line of Bare Bones Books titles online, including Bears on Bears. And they recently sent an announcement. TLA is the largest online and mail order retailer of gay home entertainment and books in the U.S. The TLA Gaybie Awards, that's G-A-Y-B-I-E, awards honor what we feel were the best films, books, actors, blogs, film festivals, and more in 2009. And Bears on Bears has been nominated for Best Gay Nonfiction Book. Nominees were chosen by their staff from the best and the best sellers of 2009. The winners will be determined solely by online voting, with the results to be announced on April 15th. Customers, readers, fans, friends, family, and even enemies can all vote as many times as they like during the month of March. So please vote early and often. Voting will end on March 31st at midnight. And there's a link on the website, ronsuresha.com. You can find the full listing of nominees along with all details of the 2010 TLA Gaybie Awards at www.tlagay.com/gaybees/a-2. Congratulations for Bears on Bears, the revised edition, being nominated for a Gaybie. So, folks, let's get busy. Head to TLA Books Online. There's a link on the website. And vote for Bears on Bears, early and often, as they say. Show your bear book pride. And thanks so much. Here's a delightful story from Peter Casciarelli's 1997 book, Gay Fairy and Folk Tales, entitled Wolf Soup. There once was a boy named Richard, who dreaded anyone finding out who he was. He was neither a bank robber, nor a retired movie star yearning for privacy. Just a shy person with a dream he preferred to keep to himself. Richard's dream was of another boy he could kiss, go to the movies with, and walk hand in hand with down the street, deep in intimate conversation, sometimes serious, sometimes laughing out loud. As far as dreams went, it was a rather nice one, but dreams go only so far if you're not willing to live them, and Richard wasn't. Maybe he feared he would have to fight for his dream and didn't feel very strong, and maybe he didn't know how many boys and young men and old men dreamed just this dream each night. And so Richard was pleasant to everyone, had no real friends, and tried to remain a stranger even to himself. He lived in a little village, and little villages being what they are, everyone knew him, and the dream of which he never spoke and hardly ever dared dream was an open secret. Some of the villagers were interested, but most weren't, because Richard was such a non-entity that it was actually difficult to notice him. Even villagers who dreamed the same dream and lived it, a courageous thing to do in what was, after all, a little village, couldn't quite take him seriously. Nor did Richard want them to, since he didn't want to be identified with them. The only people in the village who were always happy to see Richard were the ones who knew how uncomfortable he was, the gossips and the bullies, the disappointed and those without any dreams of their own. It seemed to Richard he was always running to someone who had nothing better to do than to ask him if he had a girlfriend yet, than watch him twist uncomfortably as he said, "No, not yet." It was an uncomfortable way to live, but the only way he could imagine, and so it was his way. The village stood at the edge of the great forest. Deep within the forest, in her own snug little cottage, and proud of her independence, lived Richard's grandmother, Eveline. Once each month, Eveline came to town to do her shopping and visit her grandson. She loved him dearly and saw how difficult his life was. Not that anyone would bother him while she was around, because she still had all of her teeth and knew how to use them if anyone crossed her. Richard was as close to his grandmother as he was to anyone, but that still wasn't very close. He had never shared his dream with her because he could hardly admit it to himself. So Eveline held back from offering him all the support she could have, not wanting to intrude. Still, she did offer him support in subtle and non-confrontational ways. She sewed a jacket for him, a beautiful jacket made of red velvet that glowed like a bonfire of autumn leaves. No one else had such a jacket, and Eveline thought if Richard wore it, he might come to realize that he was unique and valuable, and had a life that was his alone to live. It was big on him, but that was all right. He could grow into it. But of course, here was a problem. There was no other jacket like it anywhere in the village, not even one close to it, because this one had been made for Richard and no one else. Richard wanted nothing more than to blend in until he disappeared. This was difficult to do while wearing a red velvet jacket. The first and only time he had worn it in the street, he had run into Clarence. Clarence was the worst bully in the village, or the best, depending on your point of view. He brought a sense of mission to the work that none of the other bullies could match, and he seemed to be at his best when making Richard's already difficult life impossible. "Hey, look," cried Clarence gleefully when he saw the red jacket, even though no one else was around at the time. "It's the lady in red." Richard found this so intimidating that he went home immediately, took off the jacket, and put it away in the deepest corner of his closet. After a few days, the jacket faded from Clarence's memory, and he returned to addressing Richard in his usual way as Cupcake. Richard had often asked him not to call him that, but because Cupcake was so much less offensive than the lady in red, he felt great relief when Clarence began using it again. The beautiful red jacket hung on its hanger, and sometimes, late at night, when everyone slept and the shades were drawn, Richard would take it out and try it on. One day, Richard got a phone call from his grandmother.
"I'm not going to make it into town today," she told him. "Would you be a dear and pick up some things for me at the market and bring them to me?"
"Bring them to you in the forest?" Richard gulped.
"That is where I live, dear,"
Evelyn said dryly.
"Besides, an old friend of mine will be visiting, and I'd like you to meet him."
"All right," agreed Richard reluctantly, and he wrote down what his grandmother needed. It was anything but all right, though. The forest had always frightened Richard, and he never ventured into it. There were no nice, well-paved and street-lamp-lit streets in the forest, only narrow paths, and not many of those. He always had a secret fear of one day losing his way in the forest, and the thought of struggling and crashing around in a panic through all those green leaves and branches, fallen logs, and toadstools made him feel as if he were already there, or as if the forest were inside his own chest. If it were anyone else but his grandmother, Richard would have refused. He picked up what she needed at the market. As he stepped out, his wicker basket packed full, he ran into Clarence. Clarence was with Clayton and Clifton, two younger bullies who showed some promise and whom he had taken on as apprentices.
"Hey, Cupcake," he growled happily. "What do you have in the basket, Cupcake?"
He lifted the wooden lid to peer in hungrily. Clayton and Clifton crowded round as well, watching carefully to pick up the finer points of bullying.
"Here now, you boys, leave him alone," scolded the manager of the market, coming out onto the sidewalk in his white apron. "Go find something else to do."
Clarence pushed Richard as he and his students walked off. The manager frowned sternly after them, and then turned to look at Richard, frowning no less sternly.
"Why do you take that from those bullies?" he asked, with no great fondness for Richard in his voice.
"Oh, I don't let it bother me," replied Richard cheerfully.
Even so, he was glad of the manager's protection. He just wished the man liked him. That would be perfect, he thought, walking down the street with his basket. Someone who would protect him so he could finally be himself without fear, and who would like him for who he was. "But that doesn't seem very likely," he admitted to himself. He left the road and soon, much too soon for his liking, he stood on the edge of the forest. The trees grew very close together, as if they didn't want to admit him any more than he wanted admittance. But he thought of his grandmother waiting for her groceries, the only one in the world who cared for him and never asked him embarrassing questions. And then he saw an opening between the trees. He entered the forest. Richard quickly realized that he had been right to fear losing his way here. The path was narrow, and ferns grew along its sides, sometimes obscuring it completely so that he had to stand completely still, looking all around to discover where the path picked up again. He walked along as best as he could, and after a while he heard the sound of a tree being chopped down, which can be a very comforting sound for a boy walking unhappily through a forest by himself.
Soon he came to a little clearing where the sunlight shone down. A woodsman was hard at work with his axe. Richard stepped on a twig, snapping it. The woodsman turned around, and Richard saw, with a little flurry of butterflies in his stomach, that it was Jeff.
"Hi, Richard,"
Jeff said, not quite as warm as he had once been, but still willing to be friendly.
"Oh, hi," Richard replied, a little glumly.
They knew each other from the village, sort of. Jeff several times had tried to strike up a conversation with him, and though he was friendly and interesting and had a nice smile, he made Richard nervous. Jeff had no problems about pursuing his own dream, or with anyone knowing who he really was, and he was willing to get a little loud about it if need be. Richard always felt far too conspicuous himself when he was around Jeff, so he had taken to avoiding him. And while Jeff seemed able to take care of himself, Richard didn't get the impression that Jeff would be willing to take care of him, certainly not to the degree he needed. Richard thought that would have to be someone famous or wealthy or as big and strong as an ogre, and Jeff was none of those things.
"What are you doing in the forest?" Jeff asked.
"Taking some things to my grandmother," said Richard. He wasn't sure if he was glad to be with someone or uncomfortable with Jeff, and it made him a little tongue-tied.
"Well, it's the first time I've seen you here," Jeff remarked.
"Yes, well," said Richard.
Then Jeff asked something that alarmed Richard very much, though he himself seemed quite comfortable asking it.
"Have you seen the wolf yet?" he inquired.
"Wolf!"
cried Richard, and the word echoed among the trees. He looked over his shoulder and lowered his voice immediately.
"No, I haven't seen any wolf. I'd run a mile in a minute if I did."
"You don't have to be afraid of him," Jeff reassured him. Then he looked into Richard's eyes for the first time and added very gently,
"He'd never hurt us."
Richard drew back and wanted to demand what Jeff meant, but suddenly he was afraid that Jeff would tell him. This wasn't a conversation he wanted to have, so he said, "Well, I don't care. I don't plan on meeting him." And with that, he walked out of the clearing.
"Do you want me to walk with you?" Jeff called after him.
"No," Richard called back. "I'll get there by myself."
Then the trees closed around him, and he continued on his way. The forest seemed all the gloomier after the sunny glade. Birds called, like sudden questions demanded of Richard from the canopy of leaves overhead, startling him. Sometimes it sounded as if someone were laughing at him, though he couldn't imagine why, and even felt a little indignant about it. Then he realized that he actually was hearing laughter from just up ahead. Laughter and rough, heavy voices. They were voices he had heard many times before, and the sound made him want to become invisible.
"Maybe the path won't go by them," he said to himself hopefully.
But when he came around the next large tree, there were Clarence and his two apprentice bullies. Clayton and Clifton were hard at work, building basic skills, knocking each other over down in the dirt, while Clarence monitored their progress.
"You need to loosen up and have more fun with it, Cliff," Clarence advised.
Then he saw Richard, and his face lit up.
"Cupcake,"
he crowed.
"Cupcake,"
chimed Clayton and Clifton. They didn't have Clarence's exuberance, but they were learning.
Hi,
said Richard nervously. Clarence came up and put his face directly into Richard's, grinning. Clayton took hold of the wicker basket.
"I have to get to my grandmother's,"
Richard said, having trouble making his voice louder than a murmur.
"Let me by."
"I'll let you by," laughed Clarence, pushing Richard hard so that he fell over Clifton, who had gotten down on his hands and knees behind him.
Clayton snatched the basket as he fell.
I'll let you buy back your basket after I eat what's inside, Cupcake.
That's a good one,
said Clifton wistfully, getting to his feet.
I don't think I'll ever get your verbal fluidity.
You have to be in the moment, Clarence told him.
Suddenly the three bullies looked beyond Richard, their eyes widening in amazement, their jaws dropping open in similar response. For just a second, Richard thought that they were looking at him in a newly respectful and attentive manner, though he couldn't imagine why. Then he heard a low, menacing growl behind him. He turned and looked over his shoulder. An animal had emerged from the bushes, an enormous yet lean beast whose red fur struck a startling contrast against all the greenery. It snarled, showing long rows of teeth meant for rending and tearing its prey, and then, terrifyingly, rose up onto its hind legs taller than the tallest man and took a slow, stalking step forward.
Wolf!
Shrieked Clarence. Eyes blazing, the wolf gave a deafening growl, and the three boys scattered, dropping the basket. But because he was paralyzed with fear, and also because the wolf's blazing eyes weren't focused on him, but tracked the fleeing boys, Richard noticed something he wouldn't have had he followed his natural inclination to run in a panic through the forest. The wolf was beautiful. It wasn't just his soft red fur that mesmerized Richard, or the power in his long, sinewy body as he stood there on his hind legs, roaring like the end of the world. But there was a presence the wolf possessed, a quality of wildness, as if he were the lord of his own life, and the whole world were his territory. As the cries of Clarence, Clayton, and Clifton faded away among the trees, the wolf underwent a strange transformation. His snarl of rage melted into a mischievous grin. The murderous light in his eyes became just a twinkle, and he braced his big claw-tipped paws on his haunches and rocked back and forth, hooting with laughter. Richard thought that now the wolf looked almost like an uncle, that familiar and friendly if you ever had an uncle who dressed in rich red fur and possessed the features of a laughing wolf, as well as a long, soft tail curled like a question mark behind him. Well, perhaps on second thought, the wolf wasn't anything like an uncle at all, but he certainly was enjoying himself.
Oh, honey,
he gasped.
Do those girls know how to run or what?
He winked at Richard through his fit of hilarity, inviting him to join in, but Richard just stared at him, speechless. At last, the wolf subsided into giggles, wiping his eyes with the back of his paw. Sighed contentedly, then made a little song of it.
Too much fun keeps me young. Don't forget your basket, hon.
He gave Richard a smile that was very charming, considering the number of sharp white teeth that composed it. Then he stepped back into the bushes and vanished from sight. Richard quickly retrieved his basket and hurried along the path. It's true, he said to himself, still trembling with amazement. There is a wolf, and he's only dangerous to Clarence, not to me. And for the first time since he could remember, Richard felt glad to be different. He felt special. Even so, the way was very long. Richard kept walking. The path was still difficult to see sometimes, ending at a fallen log here and only picking up over there after a long and sometimes frustrating search. It seemed to go on between the trees forever, and, as often happened when he began a challenging or daunting project that couldn't be accomplished quickly, Richard grew fretful and irritable, and he cast about for an excuse to stop and go back the way he had come.
As he began following yet another bend in the narrow little path, he told himself that if his grandmother's cottage didn't come into view in the next few minutes, he would take that as a sign that he was on the wrong path and just go home. Then Richard saw the wolf again. He was lounging against a tree, filing his claws with a nail file as if there were no more important thing to do in all the world. He gave Richard a glance, but didn't seem to recognize him from their earlier encounter, and returned to his manicure. But the glance turned Richard's heart into a flock of doves that went winging around and around in his chest, and he felt very hopeful and very confused. "Oh, wouldn't it be great if he liked me?" he thought. Suddenly he wanted to be with the wolf all the time, for the two of them to live together in the village, kiss each other, go to the movies, and walk down the streets together deep in intimate conversation. If ever there were anyone who could protect and defend Richard and stand up for him against the whole village if need be, surely it was the strong, confident, fearless wolf. Richard cleared his throat and said, "Hello there. It looks like we meet again." The wolf's head snapped toward him. His amber-colored eyes widened, considering Richard, then seemed to fasten on him. Richard said, suddenly not at all certain how to proceed. The wolf gave a long, low growl and dropped down on all fours, his tail twitching back and forth behind him, his eyes glowing like headlights in the forest gloom. Richard's nerve broke. What had he been thinking? This was no protector. It was a hungry animal. Richard turned and took off back toward the village, but now the wolf gave a great leap and landed in the path directly in front of him, lips curled back from his sharp white teeth, snarling and slavering. He crouched down to spring. Richard, too terrified to scream, spun around again and this time raced up the path. The wolf threw his head back and howled a long song of hunger and hunting that accompanied Richard in his flight around a bend in the path and out of sight. Then the wolf chuckled, stood up on his hind legs again, and strolled off under the trees. And that was the first part of Peter Casciarelli's delightful story. Tune in to the next Bear Soup for the conclusion. Shoutouts to Bears in the City, who have almost hit show number 69, and the Cubby House podcast as well in Australia. Seems to be hitting a hibernation spot, let's say. So, best wishes to all the guys in Oz. Music by the Mermen. Thanks to Joe of BearRadio.net. And as always, the biggest shout out to my husband, Rocco. You've been listening to Bear Soup with Ron Serratia, episode number 68. Check out the Bear Soup page on my homely little home blog, www.ronserratia.com. Bear Soup is news, interviews,
skews and schmooze for the online Ursine community with your host, Ron Serratia. Bubbles for the Bear Soup Hot Tub are powered by our sponsor, Bear Bones Books. Please check out their fine titles by bear authors at barebonesbooks.com. That's spelled BEARBONESBOOKS. Look for Bear Soup and Bear Bones Books also on Facebook. And please feel free to email me at bearsoup@gmail.com. That's it for Bear Soup. Thanks for listening. Remember, sometimes you eat the bear, sometimes the bear eats you.